Greetings and salutations to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to the headquarters for conservative talk here on the internet. Welcome back to the broadcast where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. And what a tumultuous week it's been. Folks, you'll have to bear with me this week because I've been burning the candle at both ends, no doubt. I'm working 10, 12 hours a day at the new job. Still trying to assist my lovely wife in the never-ending job of raising and rearing our three young children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And in between all of that, trying to keep up with the events of a world bizarrely gone mad. And so, is it a task that I'm equal to? I guess you'll be the judge for this week's broadcast. If it doesn't go well, we may put the show on hiatus because the job and the kids are not going on hiatus. So I guess you'll have to let me know what you think this week. Let's start out in the justice file from New York City, from the CBS Wire. Alexa Longoria, a high school sophomore, was walking along Victory Boulevard near Travis Avenue on Staten Island Wednesday, texting on her cell phone when she fell into an open manhole. That's right. She says the manhole she fell into was left open and unattended, with no warning signs or no orange cones. She said two workers with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection failed to secure the area as they prepared to flush the sewer. And in she fell. Now, we have a quote from the lovely young lady. She says, "It was, like, really gross, and it was shocking and, like, scary. Because of the carelessness of those workers, I, like, got hurt." Anyway, the young lady, Alexa Longoria, has deep cuts and bruises, and she said that she now has nightmares about falling. Yeah. Now, she was texting on her cell phone. She walks along. She falls into an open manhole. Now, this is biblical. For those of you who are uninitiated and may not be expert in your Bible, this very thing is touched on in the Bible. Now, I don't have the verse right here in front of me, but I know it's from the book of Exodus, and I believe it's the 21st chapter. And I guess we'll have to open up with a warning, although this won't be a direct quote from the Bible. It won't be word for word. But it is an allusion to Scripture, which I know freaks some people out. So warning, 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 and danger, Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Am I supposed to credit Bob Enyart for that? I suppose I should. It's his line, and I've adopted it. I've stolen it. We lift a lot of our material from the same book, and so sometimes I borrow things from Bob, and I'm sure he forgives me. So anyway, giving credit where credit is due. But the verse goes something like this in the book of Exodus. And again, I'm not reading directly from it. If a man opens up a pit and an ass falls into it, an ox or an ass falls into it, the owner of the pit shall pay restitution. He'll make it good. He has to pay the owner of the ox or the ass that falls into the open pit that he's opened up. And here in New York City, we have a pit that was opened up. It was an open manhole cover left open by the governing officials. And now the Bible does not go into details as to whether or not the ass was texting on her cell phone at the time. The Bible simply lays out a fundamental guideline for us to go by, and it's up to judicious governing officials to figure out who's right and who's wrong and who's to blame in this particular incident. Now, we don't have all the details, but anyway, the Bible is relevant to everyday life today, and here's a story that proves it. Is there anything else from the lovely Ms. Alexa Longoria? Let's see. Her family May Sue. Imagine that. Shocking, right? Her mother says that, quote, it could have been an elderly person or a mother pushing a stroller. It could have been anyone. But it was our daughter, and so we're hoping to cash in. Anyway, so maybe they will sue New York, and they'll get a pile of IOUs from New York as New York follows California, I'm certain, down the rat hole of bankruptcy. But anyways, we will not follow that story to see how it turns out. If you want to follow it, you'll have to follow it yourself, but we've given you the biblical guidance you need. Anyway, go back and look. It's in Exodus, I believe, the 21st chapter. Now let's move on to more serious and pressing matters from the war file. Dateline Kabul, Afghanistan, from the Associated Press. Seven American troops were killed just this past Monday in the deadliest day for U.S. forces in Afghanistan in nearly a year. And the AP tells us this is a sign that the fight with the Taliban in the south and east could now be expanding to the north. Separately, Taliban militants claimed on one of their websites that they were holding an American soldier whom the U.S. military says insurgents may have kidnapped sometime since June 30th when the soldier Now, where did that story go? I'm not sure if I did it on the show, but I know I saw it just before the 4th of July weekend. American soldier possibly being held by the Taliban. It brings to mind all the shocking and horrific scenes that we remember. Danny Pearl being beheaded, the beheadings carried out by Islamic fundamentalists. It was a big story before the 4th of July. It seemed like it was going to be an important story, and it has simply vanished. I scanned for it on the wires this morning, could find nothing out about the missing soldier. Anyway, just wanted to bring that up. I'm wondering where the story went. I hope there are some high-level negotiations. I know they were talking about a possible prisoner swap, and I feel for this young soldier. I don't know that I could allow myself to be taken captive by the Taliban. Unless they snuck up on me and knocked me out, there's just no way. I would just immediately assume I'm a dead man, and I would, I'd try to take somebody with me. Of course, we would part ways when we got to the judgment, if they were true Islamists, but anyway, we would go into the great beyond together, because I just don't know that I don't think I would do well with torture, just based on my personality profile. I'd rather go down swinging, so to speak. Anyway, just don't know what happened to that story. I hope we hear something. One more from the war file, from the Telegraph in London. It's about Barack Obama's books, the books that he's had written for him. let's see here. Last year, before Barry Ho's victory in the presidential election, Ahmed Omar Abu Ali requested Barry Ho's biographical book, quote, Dreams from My Father, and the more policy-oriented, The Audacity of Hope. So Ahmed Omar Abu Ali is in prison. He's an American Al-Qaeda member. He's serving a 30-year sentence for conspiring to commit various terrorist acts, including the murder of George W. Bush, who was at the time the President of the United States. Well, the officials out at the Supermax prison here in beautiful Florence, Colorado, citing guidance from the FBI, decided that both books contained information that could jeopardize national security. Officials mentioned specific pages in the books that were devoted to foreign affairs, and they said that Ahmed Omar Abu Ali maybe shouldn't have his hands on books that refer to American foreign policy in any respect, because he's a terrorist and an aspiring murderer. Well, Abu Ali is quite upset. He's upset that he can't have the books of one of his favorite authors, and I'm sure, we wouldn't call Obama one of his mentors. What would we call Obama? What is the 6-degree relationship between Barry Ho and Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, except for all the vowels involved in their names? He's not a mentor, but he's probably someone that young Abu Ali looks up to. Let's just put it that way. Most of these Islamist fundamentalists even, are devoted Marxists, and Barry Ho and his MO are at the top of that list. Anyway, Abu Ali is upset. His lawyer is upset. Abu Ali's lawyer, Joshua Dratel, who very well could be Jewish, as insane as that is. Why do all these Islamic fundamentalists have Jewish lawyers? What's the deal with that? Anyway, Joshua Dratel, his lawyer, said the rejection of selected reading materials for murderers and terrorists was an example of the harsh conditions imposed on inmates at the Supermax prison. In a shorthand written note on a prison complaint form, Abu Ali argued that the two rejections of my reading materials violate my First Amendment rights. The rejections, as well as other restrictions on family visits, prompted a hunger strike by Abu Ali that has since ended. Great, that must mean he's dead. No, I read on in the story, he is not dead. So anyway, so the guy's still alive. This guy's not a real achiever, is he? You know, he wasn't convicted of carrying anything out. He was just conspiring to commit acts, conspiring to kill George Bush. He tries to go on a hunger strike, and he can't even get that done. Not a real high achiever. That must be a real disappointment to his mother. Inmates, by the way, according to the Telegraph story from London, inmates at the supposedly impregnable Supermax prison are usually kept in their cells in solitary confinement for 22 to 23 hours a day. Talk about cruel and unusual punishment. Man. A spokesman for the Bureau of Prisons told the Daily Telegraph that the books have now been deemed appropriate by Supermax. So now Barry Ho's musings are appropriate reading material for both aspiring and accomplished murderers and terrorists there at the Supermax prison. I'm glad they were able to reach some sort of out-of-court settlement, seeing as Mr. Abu Ali couldn't seem to figure out how to carry out a decent hunger strike. Anyways, let's move on. Into the politics file. It's a scary one this week, folks. As you can well imagine, it's been scary. Let me think. How long has politics been scary? At least in my short career, my short life. It's been scary since the days my dad used to sit in front of the TV pulling out his hair, screaming at the TV at Ronald Reagan and calling him a flaming liberal. That's how long it's been scary. And now, of course, Ronald Reagan is considered one of our greatest conservative presidents, and I still remember. I still remember the days when real conservatives thought Ronald Reagan was insanely liberal. So this week is just another step down that road, ladies and gentlemen. Please brace yourselves. Let's start with something a little lighthearted. We're going to talk about Barry's M.O. And if you're not familiar with Barry's M.O., well, just go back and listen to several of these broadcasts and you'll get up to speed. Back in April, Michelle Obama wore a pair of $540 Lanvin sneakers at a Washington food bank. Well, earlier this week, while strolling the wooded landscape outside of Moscow, she carried a black clutch, which Italian luxury house VBH boasts is their shiny black alligator Manila bag with a retail price of $6,000. A $6,000 bag she's carrying. What was that? You want one of those? Okay, we'll get no protests here, apparently. Now, I'm trying to think back. I remember I bought my lovely bride a very expensive bag once. Somewhere in the neighborhood of $350, which I think is an outrageous amount of money to spend on a bag, a purse, for crying out loud. But it's certainly not even close in comparison to demonstrate the amount of love in my heart for my wife, a mere $350 gift. But we thought that was an expensive bag. Anyway, the White House is in denial. They say she was not carrying the $6,000 VBH black alligator Manila bag. They clarify that she was carrying the $875 VBH patent leather bag. That's right. They've denied that it was the high-end bag, and they say it was something you pick up at Walmart. It was only $875, for crying out loud. Either way, I think she was wearing a black dress and she was carrying a black bag. So this is the first time, in my opinion, that Michelle Obama hasn't executed a gross fashion faux pas in public. She actually, you know, her shoes matched her bag, matched her dress. She didn't look like a freak. So maybe she's making some progress. She may be listening to the broadcast, for all we know. And, you know, this it's a tough balancing act, you know, when you're a wealthy politician and an avowed Marxist all at the same time. So Michelle's she's got a tough one to pull off, but it's been done for so long by so many other politicians that I'm sure MO will be able to balance the two. She has plenty of examples and, of course, her friends in the ever-compliant media. She's got the jack. 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 She's got the jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack. Now, I don't know if that's an appropriate bumper to be playing in honor of America's First Lady. I just don't know if I approve that. I am not in control, ladies and gentlemen, of what happens behind the scenes. So you can't blame me for this one. Although them are some pretty good guitar riffs. Now, do you think Angus Young sold his soul to the devil? Do you think? I mean, he's been basically playing a 12-bar blues for 35 years, and he's been selling millions of records. All right, how does that happen? Anyway, are we gonna talk about the old story where people sold their souls to the devil? Have you all heard that? If you're familiar with the blues, and I'm a man who's familiar with the blues, I don't particularly have the blues at this moment, but I've been into the blues. And this brings to mind this whole orgy of worship about Michael Jackson. Now, I have not spent a lot of time on the whole Michael Jackson thing because, let's face it, there's adequate coverage out there. Would you not agree? But one thing I heard, just scanning the stations that made me laugh, was that I guess it's been documented that Michael Jackson was downing at least 10 Xanax a day, okay? And there's going to be an investigation, apparently, into whether or not he was being overprescribed medications. And I thought to myself, if you've got documented evidence that Mike's downing 10 Xanax a day, I don't think the question is whether or not he's being overprescribed, but who exactly is responsible for the overprescribing? That's really what needs to be looked at. And I suppose in the final analysis, the responsibility lies with Michael Jackson, I suppose, at least the majority of the blame, the majority of the fault lies with the junkie who's taken the jump, and not necessarily with the dealer. Although, you know, the dealer should find himself facing a firing squad of some sort, I do believe. But anyway, it just brings to mind a Bible verse. By golly, and I've already done one Bible verse, and we've gotten the warning out of the way. So we're going to... And another thing. Did you see the Michael Jackson worship service where all the Jackson family was gathered up on stage there? Besides just the fact that it was bizarre, the one thing that jumped into my mind was, man, one thing about being Michael Jackson's plastic surgeon is referrals, referrals, referrals. I mean, did you see the women in that family? I mean, their collective noses all together didn't measure 1 inch across. I mean, that plastic surgeon had quite a successful career just from that one group of women. What are his sister's names? Janet. And there's three of them, for crying out loud. Anyway, they all have that little Long Island perky wasp nose thing going on, white girl nose. But that's, you know, that's really... Now, I might as well be on Nancy Grace's show, for crying out loud, talking about that stuff. I want to get to something serious, okay? I want to get to something serious, okay? And we're going to talk about the book of Mark. The Gospel of Mark in the New Testament of the Scriptures, for all of you public school educators out there, it's from a book called The Bible that you probably haven't seen since the last time you were in a motel, or maybe since you were 5 or 6 years old. And for those of you who attend the United Methodist Church, you may have never seen a Bible. So I just want to help you out. This is from the New Testament, which is later in the book, the Gospel of Mark, from the 8th chapter and the 36th verse. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Every time I hear a story about Michael Jackson, this verse has been jumping into my mind, and so I wanted to relate it across to you, my loyal and ever-growing audience. We hope the audience is ever-growing. We don't really know. If you're listening to the show and you have not subscribed by Feedburner, please do so that I have some idea that you're out there. Because if I don't have enough listeners, I may put the show on hiatus. I may just go on vacation and just work 12 hours a day and set the show aside for a while until a time of my choosing. But Michael Jackson gained, he could have had anything on the planet that he wanted, and quite often he did just that. But it appears to me for the last 15 years that Mike lost his soul. He wasn't in control of his own life. He had become a laughingstock, a freak of nature, a person who was worth more to the sycophants who surrounded him. He was worth more to them dead than alive. And he's proving that over this past 2 weeks. Anyway, I guess that's just a warning to everyone out there that if you seek satisfaction and fulfillment and you seek your legacy in the things of this world, be careful that you don't lose your very soul, because eternity lasts for a long, long time. For those of you who are publicly educated, you'll want to look that word up, eternity, and see just how long that lasts. And that's where Mike is now. And they don't issue credit cards in eternity. And you can't alter your features in eternity in order to avoid what you deserve. And when we all get to the other side, we'll see what Mike deserved, and we'll see what Mike got. But it should serve as a warning to all of us. Let's just leave it at that. Speaking of bizarre freaks, let's talk about Marion Barry for a moment again. Dateline Washington, D.C. from the Associated Press, the head of the District of Columbia Council, says a former federal prosecutor will look into a contract between former Mayor Marion Barry and one of his numerous ex-girlfriends. Yes. Council Chairman Vincent Gray said this past week that former federal prosecutor and Bubba Bill Jeff defense attorney Robert Bennett has been appointed to review whether Marion Barry complied with city laws and council rules in awarding a contract to some slut while the two were in a relationship. Now, right there. I mean, come on. By the way, Marion Barry is still a member of the District of Columbia Student Council, somehow. I mean, that shows you the quality of that town. Barry, by the way, he says, according to the Associated Press, that he believes the probe will show that he did not violate any laws. And that's the operative phrase here, because Marion knows he did something wrong. You know, he granted his two-bit girlfriend a city contract, but he believes he did it in a manner that doesn't violate any laws, and he thinks that will be borne out in the ongoing investigation. Yeah. Let's see. Council members are working to draft a code of conduct and ethics for members and staff. Yeah. So when you're on a student council group, which is what I call local governing body, city councils, when you're on one of those groups in a city like Washington, D.C., and all of your associates have no god but mammon in their own belly, well, you've got to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. We better write some ethical rules to try to rein ourselves in as we rob and steal the people blind. We better write some rules to make sure that we do it in a way that doesn't violate any laws. I would just like to let the student council there in D.C. know that the Ten Commandments are available for review, if you'd like. Four of them that I would like you to particularly look at: you shall not steal, you shall not murder, you shall not lie, you shall not commit adultery. Those four might help just in laying some of the ground rules for the student council to regulate and moderate their behavior. But now that I think of it, the council there in D.C., they may not have access to the Bible. It appears that all the Bibles have been removed from Washington, D.C. some years ago, except for the great big trophy kind that politicians carry into the various pagan temples there around Washington, D.C. that pass for Christian churches. They may not have access to the Bible. It's happened before. I mean, we all remember the days before King Josiah in the history of Israel, when they literally lost the Bible for near a generation. They were cleaning out the temple, pulling the trash out of the basement, and they found the Bible. They were like, hey, Josiah, look what we found, the law of God. Anyway, it seems like something similar has happened in Washington, D.C., and Lord willing, somewhere out there, there's an 8-year-old that the Lord will raise up to lead us out of the wilderness here. I suppose we'll see. Now let's move on to another freak who makes my skin crawl. We're going to talk a little bit about Barbara Boxer. She says that if the Senate bill doesn't... She says that if the Senate doesn't pass a bill to cut global warming, there will be droughts, floods, fires, loss of species, damage to agriculture, and worsening air pollution, and more. Children will die. Dogs and cats will die in the streets. It'll just be horrible, Barbara said. She's only up to like 4 to 6 Xanax a day, so she's probably in good shape. She says there's a huge upside if the Senate does act on the bill that she's putting together. She said there'd be millions of clean energy jobs, reduced reliance on foreign oil, less pollution for the nation's children. There we go. This demonic sack of rotting flesh, Barbara Boxer, cannot open her mouth for more than 30 seconds without mentioning the children. That's right. Yet she's a rabid defender of the right to kill children. So try to figure that out. It's political correctness. We're being forced to deny the obvious. Barbara Boxer stands up and she's allowed in public to defend her legislative efforts on behalf of the children, while she writes laws, supports court decisions, and defends the right of certain people in our society to kill certain children. I mean, we're in a state of mass hallucination, ladies and gentlemen. The fact that Barbara Boxer isn't run out of town on a rail when she says something as ludicrous as we've got to do this for the children, it shows that our long national nightmare is just continuing. It's just scary. I've got a quote here from a guy named Frank O'Donnell. He's the president of Clean Air Watch. And he says, for Barbara Boxer, this legislation is both the opportunity and the challenge of a lifetime. Now, we don't know if Mr. O'Donnell is a homosexual, but he is the president of Clean Air Watch. So, you know, odds are, right? Let's see. We remember a few weeks ago, the House of Representatives has already approved that the cap and trade clean green legislation, End of America bill. And with that now, you know, it's Barbara Boxer's turn to work her magic in the Senate. Let's see here. Last year, this is from the McClatchy News Service. They tell us that Barbara Boxer's standalone climate change bill fell to defeat. But there's a new strategy this year that will make it harder for senators to reject it. 6 committees are working and have been meeting for 6 months with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and they'll all combine their work into one massive bill this fall. So how did that go? We've got 6 committees, 6 months. 6-6-1. Okay. Well, they're getting there, right? They're trying. Anyway, for those of you who are numerologically inclined, you may get that, you may not. Again, maybe it's time for a hiatus. I suppose you'll have to tell me. Let's see. And let's talk about this climate folderol again here. From Reuters, we've got a study that was recently published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that basically analyzes targeting carbon dioxide emissions of rich people. Yeah, they say rich people are the biggest greenhouse gas emitters. And they've produced a study suggesting a uniform international cap on how much carbon dioxide each person could emit in order to limit global emissions. And since rich people emit more, they're the ones likely to reach or exceed their cap. Believe it or not, this is what passes for legitimate research in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's just shocking. Let's see. They report that currently the world average for individual annual carbon emissions is about 5 tons, with Europeans producing 10 tons and Americans producing 20 tons on an annualized basis. The authors hope policymakers will look at the strong link between how rich people are and how much carbon dioxide they emit. Now, I think a more productive effort would be to limit the carbon dioxide emissions based on how blindly politically correct and stupid a person is. This is just a roundabout way of asking the authors of this particular study to just shut up. You know, this song is about a post-apocalyptic, some kind of world where the socialists have taken over and you're not allowed to have cars anymore. No more internal combustion engines. Which is weird, you know, because all the guys in Rush are just like flaming hippie, environmentalist. You know, they're all Greenpeace card-carrying members. They're members of Amnesty International, the whole thing. But, you know. Whatever, the fairly creative bunch of guys, you know. And so even they could see a world in which the green mentality takes over and there are no more internal combustion engines and everyone's forced to get around on Segways or something. Anyway, let's move away from the environmentalist extremism that's going on in the Senate of the United States right now. And we'll move to a story about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Supreme Court Justice, as painful as that is to say. CNS News reports in an interview from the Sunday New York Times Magazine, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said she thought the landmark Roe v. Wade decision on abortion was predicated on the Supreme Court majority's desire to diminish, quote, populations that we don't want to have too many of, unquote. Yeah, the 90-minute interview took place in Ginsburg's temporary chambers. Yeah. Yeah, her temporary chambers, which are here on the earth. Yeah. As opposed to her permanent chambers, which will be deep in the bowels of the hottest corner of hell. Now, the interviewer, he asked Ginsburg, he says, quote, if you were a lawyer again, what would you want to accomplish as a future feminist agenda? Okay, first of all, we need to get a drug test for this, whoever conducted this interview. Because to even ask a question like that, I mean, it's just, well, let's just move on. Let's not get hung up in the minutiae of how stupid the interviewer was. Ruth Bader Ginsburg says, quote, reproductive choice has to be straightened out. There will never be a woman of means without a choice anymore. That just seems to me so obvious. The states that changed their abortion laws before Roe to make abortion legal are not going to change back. Yeah. And she may be right. She may be right, but it will not be for a lack of effort on the part of the advocates of the personhood of the unborn. Is she aware that we're at work right now in 16-plus states? Maybe Ruth doesn't get out much anymore. I think she's attached right now to some kind of machine that's keeping her alive, unfortunately. She may be right, but it won't be for our lack of trying. Let's see. Let's go to a couple of quotes from this interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Question. Are you talking about the distances women have to travel? Because in parts of the country, abortion is essentially unavailable because there are so few doctors and clinics that do the procedure? And also the lack of Medicaid for abortions for poor women? Yeah, yeah. So the reporter wants to know, what is it, Ruth, about your child-killing agenda that you're not happy with? Is it that there just aren't enough abortions available to rural women? Is it that Medicaid and Medicare are not covering abortion as you would have thought? And her answer to this question is the one that really gives us an insight into the darkness of her, of the cinder at the center of her being that could be misinterpreted to be a heart. She says, yes, yes, the ruling about that surprised me. Frankly, I had thought at the time Roe was decided, there was concern about population growth, and particularly growth in populations that we don't want to have too many of them. So that Roe was going to be set up then for Medicaid funding for abortion, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. On she goes. What an evil, evil woman. An insight into her evil, dark heart. And by the way, a majority of Republicans who are they're our saviors, we've been led to believe, in a neo-Nimrodian way, they all voted for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to put her on the Supreme Court of the United States. Yeah. Now, during the interview, Justice Ginsburg also affirmed a position she took on abortion during her Clinton-era confirmation hearing, suggesting the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution was better grounds for justifying abortion on demand than the so-called right to privacy. So do you get this? This is a woman who's sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States right now. This person has a college degree. She's supposedly educated and enlightened. And she says the Equal Protection Clause gives some people the right to choose to kill other innocent people. That's where we are. Yeah. She says, quote, the basic thing is that the government has no business making that choice for a woman. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the woman being killed in the womb? Is there anyone advocating for her, Justice Ginsburg? Is there anyone advocating for her in your courtroom, in your economy? She says, you asked me about my thinking on equal protection versus individual autonomy. My answer is that both are implicated. The decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a woman's life. She must make that decision for herself. Let's change the verbiage here a little bit. The decision to lynch a black or not is central to a Klansman's life. It's a decision he must make for himself. The decision whether or not to gas a Jew is central to a Nazi's life. It's a decision he must make for himself. The decision to kill a child is central to a woman's life. She must make that decision for herself, says Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of the most enlightened intellectual minds of our time, ladies and gentlemen, operating at the highest echelons of power in our government. Surely all is lost. Surely all is lost. All right, and speaking of all being lost, let's move into the domestic tranquility file. It's thankfully short this week, but probably only because I did not have the time to scan the wires as I usually do for the reports of murder and mayhem that happen on a daily basis in every city and every burg from Maine to Arizona, from Washington State to Florida, every single day. And Los Angeles is a prime example. From the Los Angeles Times, the Los Angeles Police Department's online crime map, intended for public use, has failed to include nearly 40% of serious crimes reported in the city. And that's according to an analysis of the website done by the Los Angeles Times. The lapses in the website's coverage mean that the map, touted by city leaders as an important and innovative resource for cities' residents to determine whether their neighborhoods are safe, since nobody can tell, above the din of all the gunfire, people are wondering, is my community safe? I need a web resource that I can go to. With all these break-ins and murders going on in my neighborhood, I've begun to wonder, is my neighborhood safe? I'll go to the web and see if the LA Police Department can help me figure out if my neighborhood is safe. Anyway, the accusation from the LA Times is that the LAPD's public database website is presenting an inaccurate picture and an incomplete image of city crime. So the LA Times discovered the magnitude of the problem while they were developing their own online map to display Los Angeles Police Department data. They were comparing the LAPD map with the department's official totals, and they revealed that thousands of crimes were being left off. The department's official crime rate tally recorded more than 52,000 serious crimes this year, but the database on the public mapping showed around 30,000. So, you know, if people really woke up to the truth in Los Angeles and anywhere USA, they would probably want to just throw up their hands and run for their lives. Stockpile weapons and ammunition. Start wearing bulletproof vests. I mean, you sit down and you actually begin to process the information about domestic tranquility in America. It's disheartening, to say the least, and it's downright terrifying if one ponders it for too long. But I suppose the governing officials just figure that the people just need to be educated as to why this is happening, you know? You just need to have more information on why your neighborhood is a war zone. If you understand better why your neighborhood is a war zone, you'll be more educated. You'll have access to more information. That's what we're willing to do for you as governing officials. We're willing to give you all the information on why your neighborhood is a war zone. Well, we want to educate people as to why this is happening. And it's a big job to educate the vast, unwashed, ignorant masses about how their government is failing them because they have failed to put the proper people in government. They want people that are nice. They want people who are nicer than God, and they've put them all in government, and now the people who are meaner than God are slaughtering the innocent in their streets by the thousands. It's a big job to educate people as to why this is happening, but that's what we're here to do, along with our friends over at KGOV.com. If you haven't had a chance to go over there, check that out. You'll get a pretty good idea as to what's going on. All right. More from this is domestic tranquility / justice file. A fugitive on a 2-day rampage across Arkansas who police said had just fatally shot his pregnant girlfriend was killed by a sheriff's sniper Friday as he tried to escape from authorities. This guy's name was Todd Bostian. He had kidnapped 18-year-old Casey Myers and took her along as he stole cars and broke into homes. Police caught up with him last week as he emerged from a home where he had taken hostages. He was wearing a bulletproof vest, and he was using the hostages to shield him from police. Now, this house had a boat dock, and he was able to reach the boat dock behind the house as he was shielded by the hostages. He climbed into the water and hid under the boat, and he kept his head above water so that in between the pontoons on one of those boats. So he stuck his head up above the water to take a breath, and a police sniper killed him with a single shot. Ah, justice. Anyway, that's a nice shot. A nice shot for justice. Okay, back into the domestic tranquility file. Dateline Hastings, Minnesota. A Minnesota mother charged with murder told police she and her two youngest children planned to commit suicide together and invoked Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch to them as an image of heaven. Patricia Ann Beck, the 42-year-old mother, was charged Friday with first-degree premeditated murder for the death of her son, Michael, 10, and with the attempted first-degree murder of her daughter, Erica, just 11 years old. The single mother told police she gave each child 10 tablets of Seroquel, which is commonly used to treat bipolar disorders and schizophrenia, and she took 25 of the pills to try to kill herself. Her lawyer said, "I really have no comment other than I share everybody's feelings about this situation, what a terrible tragedy it was." Again, folks, let's not misinterpret the word tragedy. Let's not misuse the word tragedy, I should say. A tragedy is when it rains in the mountains and a boulder is loosened and the boulder rolls down and and squashes a car on I-70 in the Colorado High Country. That's a tragedy. When someone intentionally harms another person, it is not a tragedy. It's a crime. It's a horrifying crime deserving of maximum punishment in order to deter other weak-minded losers from committing similar types of crimes. Please, a tragedy. Why are mothers killing their children so much? Why? Is it just me, or does it seem like it happens a lot? Maybe it's just me. Maybe I read too much news. That's it. It's not that it's happening anymore, Doug. It's just that you read more about it because you read the news too much. Stop reading the news. You won't feel so bad about it. Dateline Chesney, South Carolina. Police in South Carolina say an 8-year-old girl has been shot to death by the husband of her father's girlfriend. Now, that's how screwed up a world that we're in. Did you even understand that? Were you able to connect the dots? She was shot by the husband of her girlfriend's father. Anyway, I have to sit here and analyze and try to figure out who everybody is in this story. But anyway, bottom line, an 8-year-old girl was shot and killed. The man then shot himself in the stomach, and he's languishing in some hospital at taxpayer expense, I'm certain. The sheriff says the suspect has a long criminal record and will be charged with murder if he recovers. Where was that? South side of Chicago? No. Chesney, South Carolina. Never heard of it. Small town, any town, USA. Probably a beautiful place to live. Dateline Miami, Florida. As many as three gunmen stormed a birthday party on the edge of downtown Miami and opened fire early last Monday, shooting 12 people. The men were wearing all black and opened fire with automatic weapons around 1 in the morning. Shell casings from an AK-47 and two pistols were found. That's Miami. We know that's a freak show down there, but still, I mean, 12 people. Wow. Dateline Pensacola, Florida. A Florida couple was shot in their rural home while 8 of their children slept in the house. At last report, investigators did not know who killed the wealthy couple, known for adopting children with developmental disabilities, many who were born to drug-addicted mothers. Yeah, Bird and Melanie Billings of Beulah, Florida. A rich older couple who adopted needy kids, shot to death in their house for no apparent reason. The Billings had 16 children, 12 of them adopted. The state of domestic tranquility in America. Okay. Let's try to move on from that. We'll go into the international file. It's kind of thick this week, but we're running out of time, so we'll have to hurry up. From the Independent, a man was gored in the neck and lung as he ran the half-mile course through the cobbled streets during the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. That man is dead. At least 3 other people were being treated for injuries inflicted by the same bull. And another 6 people suffered minor injuries. This year, that death toll is now 15 have died in the running of the bulls since it began, since record keeping began in 1911. Tens of thousands of stupid young men travel to Pamplona each July to participate in the fiesta made famous by Ernest Hemingway in his novel, If You'll Remember, The Sun Also Rises. Sporting white clothes and red neckerchiefs, thrill seekers stay up all night drinking at what has become one of the Europe's biggest street parties before testing their bravado on the morning. Now that explains it. I never could understand what is it that causes these foolish young men to run with the bulls. They stay up all night drinking. So I guess it's kind of like getting a tattoo or something. You know, enough booze and a lack of sleep will make a person do really stupid things. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Let's dive into the international file from the Jerusalem Post. Iran, both the U.S. and Israeli intelligence believe Iran has the technical capacity to build one nuclear bomb within a year if it decides to do so. But both countries also believe the chances that Tehran will indeed make that decision are slim. I'm not sure what they're basing that on. I hope someone in Jerusalem is figuring out what to do about Iran. I'm running out of time. I don't have a lot of time. You all know that Iran is a threat, right? I guess I don't have to belabor that point. From The Independent, in the United Kingdom, capitalism and consumerism have brought the world to the brink of economic and environmental collapse, according to the Prince of Wales in a recent speech. The heir to the throne told an audience of industrialists and environmentalists at St. James Palace that he had calculated that we have just 96 months left to save the world. Mark that date, ladies and gentlemen, today, July 11th. What is today? July 12th. It's mid-July 2009. Basically, Prince Charles says we've got about 8 years. Or the whole world, and he's not kidding around either. In a searing indictment on capitalist society, Charles said we can no longer afford consumerism and that the age of convenience was over. The age of convenience. See, he never found it all that convenient to even brush his teeth, for crying out loud. And now he's telling us the age of convenience is over. He already looks like he lives in a cave. Charles' speech was described as his first attempt to present a coherent philosophy in which he placed the threat of environment in the context of a failing economic system. Well, in my opinion, this was his first attempt to present a coherent philosophy, period. And the guy's over 60 years old. Just give it up, Charles. Get out. What a moron. Dateline Moscow from Agence France-Presse. Let's see. Alleged Russian leader Dmitry Medvedev proudly displayed a coin he was given at the G8, which bears the English words "United Future World Currency." That was a coin that he was given, apparently by the organizers of the G8. I don't know. This is like one of those secret society deals. The coin was actually minted by the Bilderbergers, and it was approved by the Council on Foreign Relations, and then it was submitted to them by members of the Skull and Bones Society, and like that. Anyway, Medvedev said that although the coin, which resembles a euro and featured the image of five leaves, was just a gift given to leaders, it showed that people were beginning to think seriously about a new global currency, and indeed they are. Russia, along with China, you know, has been a vocal proponent of diversifying the global currency system away from the dollar, which has dominated global finance and commerce since the end of World War II. So, folks, I mean, take this for what it is. Our nation is on the verge of being rightly stripped of our place of prominence and blessing. That really as a natural result of our collective national sin, you know. Our nation enforces murder, theft, adultery, and perjury by law. We not only tolerate these sins, but we protect those who perpetuate them, and we celebrate those who commit them. So, America is going to lose its place. The dollar is going to no longer be the global currency. America will no longer be the global leader. America could be subjugated by some pagan power in the not-too-distant future. So is it a punishment by God? Is it a plot of the devil? Well, I suppose in a sense you could say it's some of both. I mean, God and the devil are real, and they're both as involved as they can be in the affairs of man. They both exercise influence. God does it through the body of Christ, through believers doing his will. And the devil does it by everybody else. Yeah, everybody else who without God, whether or not they're part of a conspiracy, without God, they accomplish the devil's ends, whether they're doing it knowingly or just in blind ignorance. They advance the goals of the devil. But it's us who are responsible. Why is America falling? It's us. Look in the mirror. Consider your own sin. When you want to understand the unraveling of our nation, consider what you tolerate. Consider what you call good. Consider what you teach your children. Consider all that, and perhaps we can step back from the precipice. Perhaps. Dateline Chicago, Illinois, from the Reuters Wire. China and the United States are kicking up a trade war over chicken. Yes, in which Beijing has effectively given the boot to millions of dollars worth of U.S. chicken, about half of which is chicken feet. You heard me right. Chicken feet. China imports about 421,000 tons of chicken feet a year. I said chicken feet, the feet part. That's the part with the toes that the chicken walks on. China is a huge market for chicken feet. In China, chicken feet are popular in soups, stews, and as snack items. But very few chicken feet are sold in the United States. I can honestly say I had never even heard of anyone using chicken feet for anything except the contents of a garbage bag. I just wasn't aware that there was another use for chicken feet.
We eat hot dogs.
Well, we do eat hot dogs. Maybe. Oh, okay. So we just don't call them chicken feet. Now, without the Chinese market, on a serious note, most chicken feet will have to be processed into feed or other non-food uses. Maybe that's the hot dogs. Which bring less money to U.S. chicken companies. Chinese importers last week told U.S. chicken companies that Beijing was not issuing import permits for U.S. chicken, effectively blocking chicken imports for the rest of the year. That's serious stuff. We have no word on how that might affect Sammy Hagar's new band's plans to tour China. Isn't that the name of their band, Chickenfoot? Don't know. Don't care. Whatever. Let's see here. What do we want? Oh, here we go. Dateline Salt Lake City. A gay couple said they were detained by security guards on a plaza owned by the Mormon Church and later cited by police, claiming it's all stemmed from a not-so-innocent kiss. Matt Aoun and his partner Derek were walking home from a concert cutting across the plaza near Salt Lake City's Mormon Temple when they kissed each other. Yeah. Okay, so they were approached by a security guard who asked them to leave. He told them they were being inappropriate, that public displays of affection aren't allowed on the property. And he said the other guards arrived, the men were handcuffed. And one of the homosexuals asked, "What were we doing wrong?" To which the cop should have said, "You're kissing a boy, you freak. What do you mean, what were you doing wrong?" I mean, which level do you want to start at, for crying out loud? You're kissing another guy, for crying out loud. All right. Let's see. What's that? Don't be making comments like that. I don't want to do that story. I don't want to end with that. I just don't care. I don't care about the news. I've got a stack of stories here that I had intended to close the show with, and I just don't care. It's frankly depressing to look at all these stories, and I want it to be over. Put me out of my misery, for crying out loud. All right, we'll end with this then. From Berlin, from the Reuters Wire, a drunk German. Did you get that? I said a drunk German sparked a slow-speed police chase after stealing a tractor to get home from a nightclub after his girlfriend abandoned him there. Police used pepper spray to try to stop the vehicle. What? Pepper spray to stop a tractor? Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that tactic, but let's see what else is in the story. Six police cars began trailing the tractor, which was chugging along at 12 miles an hour. After they were alerted to the theft, they sprayed pepper spray through the windows. They threw out nail strips. They finally shot out the tractor's tires. The 40-minute chase finally came to an end when officers shot at the tractor's tires after it rammed into a police car and collided with other vehicles. European Union officials cited the man for an unnecessary release of greenhouse gases, immediately set a hearing to determine if he may qualify for disability payments, and apologized to North Korea and Iran for any offense they may have taken. That's the worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Join us again next week. We may or may not be here. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, at KGov Radio, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, and my good brothers over there at Theology Online, doing their part to save Western civilization. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be with you next week. And until then, May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.